Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 2019 Results and 2020 Outlook Presentation Conference Call. I'm Andre, the Chorus Call operator. The conference must not be recorded for publication or broadcast. At this time, it's my pleasure to hand over to Stefan Weber, CEO of Newron. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Andre, and welcome to everybody to this conference call. Also in the name of my colleagues on the executive management team, I'm joined today by Ravi Anand, our Chief Medical Officer, currently in Mumbai, India, Roberto Galli, the Vice President Finance, and Marco Caremi, Executive Vice President Business Development, brave guys right now in Milan, Italy, Dennis Dion, Vice President Commercial Affairs, and Larry Alves, Vice Chief Medical Officer in our operations in Morristown, New Jersey. Thanks for joining again. It will be my pleasure in this call to remind you of the last 14 months' highlights and put that in relation to the strategy of the company before my colleagues will guide you through the other topics of your interest, and then we get into the Q&A session. I do assume that reading the press release, you have linked to the presentation that we are going to use in this conference call. It's also directly downloadable to the website. So if you go to that slide deck and we start on slide 3, you will see the disclaimer. Obviously, we might be making forward-looking statements, and we ask you to be cautious about use of those statements. So if we move on to slide 4, this is about the highlights of the last 14 months. It is called execution on our strategy. Remember, the strategy of Newron is to become a sustainable commercial entity selling our own drugs in orphan or orphan-like markets, primarily in the United States, and if viable, also in parts of the European Union. Let us focus first on the two compounds that might have the largest impact on the value of our stock and of our company and change the nature of the business. Starting with Soriatan for Rett syndrome, remember this is one of those almost 9,000 rare diseases for which barely a few hundred drugs are available. And so also for Rett syndrome, there is no drug available today to treat those patients. We are indeed the first company ever to run a pivotal study in that indication. Remember that last year, same time, we had just completed the enrollment of the 129 patients in the potentially pivotal STARS phase 3 study. Since then, we have moved the study through the full 6 months double-blind treatment period, and our CRO, one of the leading CROs in the pharma world, has cleaned up the database, has locked the database, and it is currently and still blinded. So nobody in the world knows anything about the outcome of that study as per this point in time. Remember that we disclosed in December that we had filed with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration the final statistical analysis plan, a document which explains to the FDA in all detail of how we want to read out the results of that study. And then the FDA came back to us pretty late, in all fairness, and asked us to please go for a meeting with them to discuss this analysis plan. And we are happy to let you know that we did have that meeting with the FDA, and we are waiting for the minutes from that meeting right now, and that as per our current best knowledge, we do expect that the results from that STARS pivotal study will be disclosed to the markets no later than by the end of the first half of this year, so June 30 of this year. And you know that these results, if positive, would be a game changer for Newron, because that would mean we would go straight towards asking the regulatory bodies for meetings to define the path towards filing the registration dossier, the NDA and MAA in the different markets. And we might see Soriatan become the first treatment ever approved for Rett syndrome. Very importantly, towards the end of last year, the FDA granted the rare pediatric disease designation for Soriatan, which is one of the key steps to qualify for the priority review voucher. And those of you who know about orphan diseases in kids know that such a document can be sold on the market for cash right now, an equivalent of about $100 million at any time. So we are proud that we took that key step towards qualifying for one of those vouchers should Soriatan be approved. Already a few years ago, we had gotten the orphan drug designation both from the U.S. and European authorities. That means regardless of any patent protection, we are certain of a market exclusivity of 7.5 years in the United States and 12 years in the European markets. Now, it is not only and all about getting a truck approved and showing that it works and selling it, but it is also, especially in those rare diseases, very, very important to be well connected and integrated into the patient community. And it is very important that beyond the insiders, those families who are really having kids with those orphan diseases, there's sufficient qualitative and quantitative knowledge about the impact of those disease and the cost of that disease. So that is why today we are proud that quite a while ago, we were the first party to start a real international or global burden of illness study. And in November last year, we finally started the outreach of that phase in the United States. And just early this year, we expanded that outreach to Europe, means UK, Germany, and Italy, and Australia. And Dennis will give you an insight on how well that is received, that outreach is received in the community, how much feedback we get from the parents and the caregivers. So in a nutshell, in those 14 months that we are reporting about, Sarepta has made it to this one point that we have been waiting for so excitedly, and that is in the next few months, we will finally be able to see the results of the last year's work in that rare indication, and that will be a game changer for Newron indeed, if the results are positive. Let's move on to evenamide and schizophrenia. Remember that we were about to start a phase III program with that completely new mechanism, a new indication in schizophrenia, and that the FDA reminded us after seeing some of our safety data that they had concerns which we should take care of. And in the meantime, we did have the meeting, and we updated you in January of this year that we did have an agreement with the FDA on the quality of the work that we need to do before we can start the phase III program. And right now, we believe that we should have results from the work that we are planning to do in Q3 of this year. And if that is sufficiently positive and convincing the FDA, we would expect that we can finally start our phase III program by end of this year. And this phase III program, as you will remember, consists of two pivotal studies, one in patients with schizophrenia experiencing worsening of psychosis on atypical antipsychotics, and we would be the first add-on treatment to those patients. We are talking about a very large indication. About 70% of today's schizophrenia patients will be off their current drug after about 18 months, either due to side effects or because the drug show worsening of their benefits. Those 70% of today's patients need a treatment alternative urgently, and evenamide could become that treatment alternative. The other indication that we are going for, we call it orphan-like because we are talking about 20,000 to 25,000 patients in the U.S., about the same number in Europe and Asia. These are patients who are treatment-resistant, for who there is only one drug that helps, and that's clozapine, with all the magic and all the potential bad this drug has to offer. 30% of those patients who take clozapine will become treatment-resistant again, and for those patients, and that is the number, 20,000 to 25,000 patients in the U.S., there is no rescue at all. And for those patients, we believe we should develop evenamide in a second pivotal study, and both studies should start by the end of this year if, as expected, we can convince the FDA that evenamide is sufficiently safe to start that phase III program. If we move on to slide five, and that's cedarusafenamide, there's a lot of additional launches and news that we had in the last 14 months, and that is all good news. So we've seen the launches in Australia, Canada, and Colombia. The drug has been approved in Brazil and the United Arab Emirates. Our total income from safenamide has increased by 75% over the prior year to €7 million, including a one-time non-reimbursable milestone for approvals. Meiji Seika and Eisai have launched the drug in Japan. But it is not only about all those additional and new markets, very impressive performance in Canada, for example, but it is also that we see improvement in existing markets. So it's very important to see that someone has been able to negotiate the cap in Italy out of the world. So we should see stronger growth in Italy. And finally, we are waiting to see the drug also being approved in Mexico and Israel. But remember that this drug, which has a simple label as an add-on treatment to levodopa for patients suffering from motor fluctuations in the U.S., we always said this drug has that additional benefit. It could be the one and only treatment that improves Parkinsonism and delays or reduces dyskinesia. In one shot, it could become something like the first add-on treatment to levodopa in patients. And it is very safe, very beneficial safety profile. It is only once a day, and it's very easy to swallow for Parkinson patients. And that is why we always promoted that we should confirm what we know from prior evidence that this drug improves levodopa-induced dyskinesia. So you remember that Zambon did have discussions with the FDA on the design of a study that would be dedicated to the dyskinetic population for which we could get an additional label. The intention now, as the talks have developed, is that this drug should not only be run in the U.S., but also in Europe and Asia and Australia. And the talks are going right now into the direction that Zambon will hand over to Neuron based on our experience with sulfonamide. Remember, we have taken that drug over all the hurdles in development and regulatory in Europe and the United States. I believe we can claim that nobody knows more about this drug than us. So talks are ongoing between Zambon and us that we will run this study, and Zambon will stay associated to the study. But the financial terms will not change. That means we will go 50-50 on the study cost until we reach a certain cap. And then from then on, Zambon will go on paying. And in return for our investment and contribution to the study, we will get a one-time milestone, and we will get an increased share of the royalties from all Zambon sales if the study is successful and the label should be granted. So the idea here clearly is take sulfonamide to the peak potential in all markets. That's what this study is about. And we want to run this study as soon as possible with success. Looking at the corporate news flow, very importantly, the European Investment Bank had committed to fund us with up to 40 million euros. So far, we have called 17.5 million. That means Roberto can still call another 22.5 million euros. The milestones are fulfilled. So as we go with our programs, we can call additional money. Given the hiccup we had between Switzerland and the European Union, at a certain point in time, we decided that we should have an additional listing of our shares on the Düsseldorf Exchange and an additional trading on Xetra that became effective end of June. And so all our investors have a fair, easy, and low-cost access to the Neuron stock. That was the objective. Our cash by year's end is 39.2 million, but as I mentioned before, we can call another 22.5 million. So the total cash available at our disposal is up to 62 million euros. So if we go to slide six, in a nutshell, what is it all about? We want to become a sustainable commercial business. Zadago is globally licensed. So the one thing we can do here is support this drug to get to its peak potential. And that is why we run the LID study. Take for granted that Zadago is evidence that we can take a drug over all the hurdles and get it approved in the key territories of the world. So Risatan, as discussed before, can become a game changer, and it can become a game changer this year, as it might become an approvable drug. It could make us a commercial business for the U.S. and potentially for parts of Europe. And the evenamide, this is all about a completely new mechanism of action, a new concept in treating inadequately or non-responding patients in schizophrenia. We have the knowledge, we have massive news flow, and we have the money to get there. I think that is these days a comfortable situation. So going back to the commercial part of it on slide seven, on sulfonamide, well, our partners drive it in the world. We have collected so far more than 50 million euros on milestones and royalties, and more to come. So Risatan, that would make us a commercial business. and evenamide that has two shots for us. One is a substantial license deal for a big indication. 70% of today's schizophrenia patients, a huge license deal. The drug qualifies also for other indications. At the same time, we have that small niche indication, clozapine treatment-resistant population, that we could serve ourselves. That is it, and I hand over to Ravi for the walk through the pipeline.
Good morning, everyone. So I'm going to start with slide 9, which is on Zodago, safinamide. And to this date, it probably is the only drug that has been approved for Parkinson's disease in the last, I think, 10, 12, 15 years. So it's a new chemical entity, and which has a mechanism that involves both dopaminergic modulation as well as glutamatergic modulation. The drug has been developed and approved for as a treatment for mid to late stage Parkinson's disease patients who basically need an addition to L-DOPA for the treatment of motor fluctuations. Parkinson's disease, as we know, is the second most common progressive neurodegenerative disorder, but because of the fact that it's got a very long longevity in these patients, it is crippling for the patient, it's crippling for the family and for society, which costs well over $4 billion worldwide. What we have been able to do, that in addition to improving motor fluctuations, which is just a regulatory endpoint, we've also been able to demonstrate that it improves activities of daily living, motor function in these patients, and clinical global impressions of the physician, both in terms of severity of the disease as well as improvement compared to baseline. A remarkable feature of the drug has been the fact that it increases on time without any increase in troublesome dyskinesia. Compared to most of the drugs on the market, that is a differentiating feature. And it also goes back to the original mechanism, which is glutamate modulation. And therefore, we think it's not only going to prevent dyskinesia, but it may actually treat dyskinesia in patients who already have it. With that, as Stefan has mentioned already, we had our partner Zambon had been having previous discussions with the U.S. and Food Drug Administration, including us, basically, on the, we're consulting them that, on how to design a study to look at L-DOPA-induced dyskinesia, based upon the prior data which we had shown in a very large sample size, that even at the end of 2 years, the 100 milligram dose of Zodago was significantly superior to placebo in patients who had dyskinesia. So the agreement has been reached with the FDA on the design of the protocol, and it is now, as Stefan has mentioned, it's been agreed that we will take the lead, provided all the other arrangements have been worked out. We intend to perform the study as more or less a global study, and we basically are looking at the profile of the drug to be able to attract both investigators, prescribers, and the more the general population gets to hear about the fact that this drug is going for treatment of dyskinesia, there'll be greater interest in the drug. Basically, what we're going to be doing is looking at pointing out the fact that this drug has shown efficacy in the models of L-DOPA-induced dyskinesia in animals. It's been effective. The profile has been shown in vitro models, in vivo models, and, of course, in patient data, which we showed in 223 dyskinetic patients in a two-year study. We expect that this study, if we are to start this, will probably take about another 4 to 5 months to discuss with regulatory authorities in Europe and other countries, and then basically lead to a start towards the end of this year. So, moving on to slide 11, I think Stefan has already covered this, that the drug has been licensed and approved worldwide. We have multiple partners, and basically, there's nothing much to add to that, but we look forward to getting more launches done in the very near future. Moving on from there to a disease of children, and I'm now on slide 12. We're talking about Rett syndrome, a neurodevelopmental disorder, which has a very low prevalence, and that's why it's designated as an orphan disease. It is linked to a mutation in the X chromosome linked MECP2 gene. Males don't survive because they only have one X chromosome, and if that's affected, they will die. The girls who have a single X chromosome mutation survive, but they suffer from the disease. And the disease is such that it's very insidious in its onset. The first couple of years, there is really nothing to differentiate these girls, and then there's some degree of slowness. There's some loss. Then basically, they stop improving. Loss of acquired skills, and they become more and more withdrawn, almost suggesting as if they might be having autistic features. At that point, you begin to see seizures. And then suddenly you have the onset of respiratory abnormalities, which are the crippling feature of the disease and a hallmark feature of the disease. These respiratory abnormalities are characterized by apneas that basically could go as long as 2 minutes. These girls could have 40, 50 apneas per hour. Their blood oxygen saturation goes down to below 90%, could go down to as low as 50%. They suffer from cyanosis. They then begin to have severe motor and intellectual impairment. And by the age of about 7 or 8, they have very little speech left. And by the age of about 10 years or so, most of the girls will be in wheelchairs or fairly needing a lot of assistance in walking. By the age of about 13, approximately 60 to 70% of the girls in the U.S. at least will not be able to feed by themselves or swallow, so they may need G-tubes for feeding. There really is no treatment for it. The girls basically, after the age of 14, 15, lead a very retired life. Basically, they're restricted to bed. They may get actually contractures from the lack of movement, and they need surgery for that. There's a big problem here in these girls that a lot of them die suddenly. And it's been speculated that because these girls already had a QTC abnormality because of the disease, and they had the respiratory abnormalities, the mixture of the two might be leading to arrhythmias, and that could be the cause of death. With sarizotan, what we have is a very targeted development. And what we are trying to do is to address primarily the respiratory abnormality and assume that the respiratory abnormality, if we can improve that in younger patients, it may delay the onset of the abnormalities, other abnormalities, the worsening. In patients who already have it, it may improve the respiratory abnormality, but in addition, improve some of the associated features. They have a lot of gastrointestinal reflux. They get scoliosis from the breath holding. They get hernias. They get dental decay from all the respiratory abnormalities. And by improving that, we may not necessarily, this is not a disease progression drug, but it may be a life-modifying drug for these patients or their caregivers. Where did we get to this? Like I Googled ghost slide 13. It points out to you this all came from a serendipitous discovery that a 5-HT1A agonist could improve respiration in an animal model of Rett syndrome. And this work, which was done by university, you can see in the graph above, you see the flat periods, those are representing the apnea periods. At a dose of 5 milligram per kilogram, as you can see below, sarizotan completely obliterates all these apneas, about 80-85% reduction. We have tested this in various models. We've tested it in MECP2 single mutation, multiple mutation, the most common mutations. We've even tested in male mutant mice who are the worst. Abnormalities, and it seems to work in all of these cases. We tested it after a single dose. We tested it after injection. We tested it by giving it in feed. We tested it long-term. And in all cases, we see a significant reduction in apnea and hyperventilation, generally around the region of 60 to 85%. Based upon these data and the fact that we got this drug from Merck, Germany, who had already treated about 2,400 page subjects. We basically approached the health authorities, who advised us not to go for an open label small study, but to really do a study that could actually help us get approval based upon a single study. And they advised us to go ahead for a path which would be acceptable for everybody. So we have basically developed this in accordance with the discussions with the FDA, EMA, HPB. And as Stefan has mentioned, we already have the orphan designation. So it was pointed out to us that we just need to do one study to be able to get approval. Moving on to slide 14. And as you can see, we discussed this with multiple health authorities in Europe, and we got agreement on the final protocol for everybody. And we have a high dose, a low dose, and placebo group, and 43 patients per group. So that's 129 Rett syndrome. This may not sound like much, but believe me, it's been extremely, excruciatingly painful to get these patients enrolled over the last two and a half years. Basically, we are including all patients with Rett syndrome, whether they be males or females, although we have not been able to find a male who met all the criteria, who could be as young as 4 years, a body weight has to be greater than 10 kilograms, and who meet the Rett syndrome clinical consensus criteria. They have an MECP2 mutation. They have at least 10% of the time complaints of abnormal breathing. And then a more specific criterion, which is required by all the health authorities now, is that they have 10 episodes of arrhythmia, which are at least 10 seconds in duration within an hour. And this has to be confirmed by cardiorespiratory monitoring. Rett syndrome is peculiar that the apneas only occur during the day, not at night. And it's also peculiar that these girls are very, very prone to exacerbations of the disease based upon tension. So you really cannot do it in a hospital setting. They freak out there, so you have to do it at home. So we were able to develop an instrument which could do it, and together with about 14 centers of excellence worldwide, we were able to initiate this study. The efficacy endpoints based upon discussions with the FDA, the primary is the reduction of the number of apnea episodes per hour. And then, because it's a biophysical tool, it was felt as a clinical importance, we should also use something which can measure the overall change in these patients. And on these patients, if they do not talk, they do not write, you cannot do anything else with them. So only the caregiver can assess how they are. So we have a caregiver rating of the top three, the most severe three symptoms that these girls have. They're documented at baseline, and then we basically monitor over the period of time. That is, the caregiver monitors them, and then basically we look at that. We also look at the caregiver's overall assessment of how the patient is compared to baseline, that is known as the caregiver rating of change, the CIC. That is, rating is given by the caregiver, but is under the control of the investigator who guides them. And then we have the usual Rett scales, like the motor behavior assessment scale and the Rett clinical symptom severity scale. This is a 6-month study. All patients have completed treatment. The database is locked. As Stefan has mentioned, the FDA required us to not unblind prior to discussing the statistical analysis plan. And we have discussed those, and I think we have come to a resolution. We're just waiting for the final minutes, and then we can basically make any changes required or any amendments, and to start the work of processing the data for the database lock once again and leading to unblinding. So we expect the results will be in the second quarter of this year. We also realize that in addition to just doing the clinical work, there's a need to develop a measure of what the burden of the disease is. And for that, I turn over to Dennis Dionne, who's going to talk about this.
Thanks, Ravi. Good afternoon. My name is Dennis Dionne. I welcome this opportunity to update you on Neuron's commitment to invest holistically in Rett to create a successful first-to-market orphan treatment. The centerpiece of the non-clinical effort focuses on the burden of illness study, but it's so much more. It's a global survey to quantify the ways in which Rett syndrome affects daily life. It will represent the largest and most comprehensive study. It'll be across 5 countries with participation goals targeting some 750 caregivers and 210 allied healthcare professionals. It allows Neuron to foster partnerships and collaborations with the international Rett advocacy, thought leaders, and governing payers. It was designed to be scientifically robust. It meets health technology assessment requirements. It is under country IRBs and utilizes validated health quality instrument developed by Euroquell Research Foundation. The goals are to align the economic and clinical outcomes, raise awareness of breathing abnormalities and impact on associated symptoms. Rett's a multi-organ, multi-symptom disease. Our value proposition increases as treatment effect is expanded. The study will provide input to facilitate global filing of Syricitan in support of pricing and reimbursement negotiations. Through this effort, Neuron has cultivated significant learnings and built trust from working in concert across the diverse stakeholders in the international Rett community. We believe this will deliver leadership commercial advantage. Moving off the burden of illness, we talked a little bit about the rare pediatric disease priority review voucher. Syricitan was granted on November 13, 2019, a pediatric designation. That'll help us progress on approvable Syricitan, as mentioned by Stefan. As stated by FDA, is we're somewhere in the vicinity of $100 to $150 million. Looking at the market potential across Europe and the United States, there's approximately 36,000 patients. Neuron has put together and designed a program that we believe will allow us to reach access to these patients with about 25 or 30 medical liaisons across both Europe and the United States. Now, moving on to slide 16. In the United States, we launched the burden of illness on November 1st. We achieved 370 caregivers that completed studies, 64 allied healthcare professionals that completed it. We recently, February 17th, launched it in Europe across UK, Germany, Italy, and Australia. In the first 2 weeks, we have already received 142 caregiver completed surveys, 17 healthcare professionals. This is a 2-hour survey that has to be done online. We are also receiving requests from outside scope countries requesting that their voices be heard, including from Israel, Netherlands, and France. So what's the relevance? The Rett community understands Neuron's leadership and contribution value. Our pre-launch efforts are impactful. This is Neuron's leadership commercial advantage. So with that, I'm going to turn this back to Ravi, and I think he'll start with slide 17 on schizophrenia.
Thank you, Dennis. I think I always welcome an opportunity to talk about schizophrenia. Unfortunately, Stefan doesn't give me much time, so I'll limit myself to some very few comments. I think you all know schizophrenia. It's a disease that affects approximately 1% of the population worldwide. It does not matter which country you go to. It's always the same. The disease is crippling because it affects young adults, or the males around the age of 18, female about 5 years later, during the most productive period of the time of their life, and basically it stays with them till they die. Very few patients, very rare patients, who ever have a full remission. The patients have a series of symptoms. We all know about them: hallucinations, delusions. They suffer from cognitive worsening. They're unable to do much. They have negative symptoms. They're withdrawn. And they essentially cannot work. Treatments that we had over the last 30, 40 years seem to suggest that they can control the disease, but we all know by now that that's not the case, and they all have pretty significant side effects. The older drugs produce EPS, neuroleptic malignant syndrome, the newer drugs produce sexual dysfunction, weight gain, etc. Why do we want to develop this drug? This drug is like no other drug developed for schizophrenia. It does not affect any neurohormone that any of the other CNS drugs affect. The only thing it does is it inhibits sodium channels in a voltage-dependent manner, and at the same time, because of the sodium channel effect, it inhibits the stimulated release of glutamate. Why is that important? Because now, increasingly, we recognize it's the onset of glutamate release that precipitates the illness. We also recognize now that patients who are poor responders, treatment resistant, have abnormal glutamate functioning. So giving those patients dopamine blocking drugs will do nothing. We know that most patients, after a few years, will begin to show symptoms of inadequacy. 30% of all patients with schizophrenia are treatment resistant, and only clozapine has shown efficacy, but clozapine is associated with significant shortcomings. However, there are 30% or 50% of the patients who don't even respond to clozapine, and there is no treatment for them. What we have been able to do is to demonstrate in animal models that the addition of evenamide to clozapine produces a unique benefit that may be of benefit in these patients for whom there is nothing else. To point out to you the shortcomings of the current medication, in a NIMH publication in 2017, they looked at patients who, after 1 year, first episode U.S. patients who had access to healthcare, who saw a psychiatrist or a healthcare provider, who were prescribed medication. And at the end of 1 year, the data which came out was pretty horrendous. They have 24 times greater mortality than age-matched controls. They use mental health services all the time. And even then, the disease is not covered by currently existing medication. So there is a tremendous need for a new medication in this field. There are about 4 million patients worldwide. And the cost of society, just for the United States alone, is estimated to basically be around $63 billion per year. The next slide, which is slide 18, demonstrates the mechanism of action. On the right-hand side of the graph, you can see the antipsychotics. They affect dopamine systems, but they do not affect glutamate. A drug like evenamide affects both the dopaminergic system and also cortical neuronal activity and glutamate transmission. And then you combine this with a dopamine-blocking drug, you could actually produce improvement in things which are not produced by the dopaminergic blocking drugs alone. We have done experiments in which we have combined this drug with haloperidol, risperidone, or aripiprazole, and we always get the same pattern. Whenever those drugs are ineffective, not able to produce a benefit, the addition of this drug produces an efficacy in the models. This is a new chemical entity. It was synthesized by Neuren Pharmaceuticals, and we have a composition of matter patent that has been granted in 2013, and we go up to 2028 plus extension terms for this drug. Now, where are we in the development of this drug? Basically, just to point out the mechanism of action very quickly, on the left-hand side of the graph, you can see basically what happens when we give this drug to at the concentrations which are about 100 times lower. It produces an effect on the native sodium channels. If you take high-frequency firing neurons in the middle part, you can see a 1 micromolar concentration completely wipes out the firing rates of abnormally firing neurons, whereas low-frequency firing neurons Those are the normal ones. It has barely an effect, suggesting that this drug, when it affects the neurons, it will not affect the normal functioning ones, so therefore will have less side effects. On the right-hand side, you're seeing the effect that is most important. This is in vivo microdialysis, and what it shows you is that evenamide has no effect on basal glutamate. That's the first part of the curve that you're seeing. We then administer a drug called veratridine to induce glutamate release, and you can see the black peak going up. And then you can see the two other peaks, which are the evenamide, showing you that it reduces glutamate release. This is the mechanism that we wanted to see, the sodium channel effect as well as the glutamate release inhibition. We have tested this drug in almost every animal model of psychosis and of mania. We tested it in cognitive impairment, impulse control, and wherever we have tested it, it seems to work. It seems to work in monotherapy, but our interest is in getting in combination with another drug, and you can see that wherever we tested it in add-on models, it seems to work there too. These are the bases on which the FDA and the other health authorities have agreed that we could go ahead with this drug. So we basically have done a four-week study, a pilot safety study in a small number of patients, and to our surprise, placebo-controlled study. Despite the four-week nature, the small number of patients, we were able to demonstrate significant benefit for positive symptoms. We were able to, in addition to risperidone or aripiprazole, we were able to demonstrate a benefit on almost every one of the scales and measures that we were looking at. We could see significant improvement in PANSS positive and CGI change, responder rates, and we could also see an effect on level of functioning, which measures functioning scale and severity. So based upon this, we have designed the phase 3 program, which has been agreed upon with the health authorities and various European countries, U.S. and Canada. We will basically be doing two big pivotal studies. One is in non-treatment-resistant patients who are not responding well to their current second-generation atypical. And this study, 003, will enroll about 520 patients. A second study, which is one of the most exciting studies that you could have heard about, is a treatment, ultra-treatment resistant schizophrenia study. These are patients who are not responding to clozapine, and we add clozapine, we add evenamide, and randomize these patients to a low-dose, high-dose, or placebo, and we expect to see an improvement compared to placebo. If both studies come out positive, we will get the entire schizophrenia indication. Obviously, if the clozapine comes out alone, clozapine study comes out alone, we would just get the clozapine-resistant population alone. And if only the 003, the non-treatment-resistant come out, we need to do another study. The major advantage is if the clozapine study comes out positive, we will be able to give this drug out on a treatment IND basis and collect safety data, so we'll be able to enhance the development of the NDA. We were ready to start, but as Stefan has mentioned, we got a message from the FDA that they were concerned about some animal findings, and they wanted us to do some additional work before we start a very big program of this type. I'm very happy to report that all the work we have done till now suggests that the FDA concerns may have been unfounded. We expect to complete all the work by the third quarter and submit it in the fourth quarter to start the program by the end of the year. So moving on to slide 23. The company highlights, I think we've already covered most of them, as you can see. The Dago has been developed for Parkinson's disease as an add-on to patients on L-DOPA, pointing out our capabilities of taking a drug from the first human administration through NDAs in Europe and in the U.S. So this time we are now at the verge where we have taken a drug in a novel indication. Never has been a phase 3 study done, a novel endpoint. We are at the point of basically doing the database analysis as soon as we have received the FDA minutes and have done any new programming required. For schizophrenia, I think remains the breakthrough indication for this company. This is a drug which is really going to be revolutionized. If the results are positive, it will revolutionize the treatment of schizophrenia because it moves away from the old concept of monotherapy and now takes add-on therapy in patients who are the most difficult to treat. We have a lot of compounds which are near-term value drivers. We have a management team, I'm very happy to say, has already done this before and has a proven track record. The good thing is that we have money in the bank at the present moment that can help us carry out the program, and we also have the facilities from the European Investment Bank in case, well, if we want to drop any further money. So with that, I turn over to Roberto, slide 24.
Thank you, Ravi. Good afternoon to everybody. So, as already stated by Stefan, since June 26, we are also traded on the electronic platform called Xetra at the Düsseldorf Stock Exchange, and our ticker is NP5. The number of outstanding shares is still 70.8 million, and it's exactly the same that we had at December last year, so 2018. And also senior managers and directors are still holding 881,000 options as we did at the end of last year. For additional information, please have a look at our corporate governance section and you can find it on our website. I want to thank you all the analysts that are covering Neuren. And also all our supporting material shareholders that are with us since 2012. So I'm talking about Investor, Aviva, Zambon, and AXA. Going to the next slide, so slide 26, just to have a quick look on the numbers. License income increased from zero last year to 2.2 million, and this is mainly due to a non-refundable milestone payment from Japan according to the approval of the authorities there to the market for the market. Also, the royalties increased by about 18%. I'm sure that the removal of the Italian cap that was set by AIFA when approving the launch of safinamide in Italy will help increasing the sales of Zambon and accordingly the royalties for us. Net R&D expenses are significantly higher if compared to last year. So we were at 9.8 million and we are now at 17.4. And I can even tell you that if the stability law 2019 hadn't amended so dramatically the R&D tax credit law, our benefit of the R&D tax credit would have been significantly higher, because last year we had a 5.9 million R&D tax credit, and this year, with such an increase of the research and development expenses, the R&D tax credit was only equal to 4.9 million. In the next slide, so slide 26, you can have a quick look on the balance sheet of the company. Current assets increased by 5 million, of which 3 million is related to the R&D tax credit that, as said, has increased up to 16.6 million. Please note that we are using this credit to offset certain kind of social contribution. So that means that we do not have any kind of cash disbursement while paying these social contributions and other minor taxes. Cash is enough to finance our activities beyond 2021. And the non-current liabilities increased mainly because of the EIB loan that is accounted for amortized cost. If we go to next slide, so slide 28, probably what I'm showing you is the shortest agenda of a shareholders meeting. And the first point is the approval of financial statement as of December this year. And in the second point, we have to appoint the new board of directors. Our intention is to present the existing six, and our intention is also to maintain the total remuneration at €320,000, as it was for the previous mandate of 3 years. In the next slide, there are all the contact lead details, so ER and PR agencies, and then I will give back to the moderator for the M&A section.
So, Andre, we are ready to enter the Q&A.
The first question comes from the line of Bob Pooler from Valuation Lab. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Good to hear you're all alive and kicking despite the presence of the coronavirus in the Milan area. Just a few questions, if I may. Kicking off with the operating expenses, could you provide a little bit of guidance of 2020? It seems to me that it'll be a little bit lower because a lot of the clinical trials will start at the end of this year. And also, you might have a little bit lower SG&A because you had listing costs last year for Dusseldorf. Is that a correct look at the operating guidance?
Well, it is correct, but up to now, what we can disclose is beyond 2021 because we have a clear feedback from FDA, but as you can imagine, we are still in discussion with them. So we don't have much clarity on what has to be performed on top of what we have already agreed upon on the evenamide side, and those on the sarizotan part. We don't know which are the hurdles, if any, that we are supposed to face in the next 3 to 6 months. So overall, I can tell you that it's beyond 2021, and that 61 million are more than enough to go ahead.
Yeah, I agree. That seems to me too. Just maybe on sarizotan, on the STARS trial, and also the meeting with the FDA on the statistical analysis. Could you provide any feedback that you got from the FDA there, any surprises from your side? And then also the burden of illness survey, the Voices of Rett syndrome. When do you expect to release results of that?
Hi, Bob. This is Ravi. I think we had a very good discussion with the FDA on the sarizotan plan. And I think we were able to resolve a lot of the things that which seemed to have been a problem for the FDA. And I think we came out to a very good situation. Now, I hate to go any further than that without seeing the FDA minutes, because as you know, one can always assume that the FDA and we have reached an agreement then to find out this plan. But all I can say is that it will not have any major disruption on our plan, database, the analysis plan, etc. So we are proceeding to develop it. Of course, we cannot finalize it till we get the FDA comments, and then the device plan will be submitted to the FDA for a final sign-off, and we begin the programming. So my gut feeling is, like I said to you, it will definitely be in the second quarter based upon what we have assumed till now. I'm sorry, could you repeat your second question?
That's just on the Voices of Rett, the survey that you're doing now, where you've also expanded that outside the U.S. When do you expect to release results of that?
Dennis?
Yeah. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Dennis.
It's about a three-month study. So we anticipate finishing up in Europe sometime in the second half of this year. We're trying to align with the clinical trial. We don't want to get out too far ahead of the clinical trial. We'll tabulate results sometime my third quarter and then go into publications, both scientific and consumer, and begin to start raising the noise level as we get closer to knowledge about when we believe sarizotan's approvability will allow us to hit the market.
Okay, great. And then just one final on today with the PD-LID study. Could you provide a little bit more color on the co-development there, a plan with Zambon? The milestone payment that went off, any indications that it's going to be something like a single digit and also the increase in the royalties, any indication there as well? And will that also apply for Japan as well? Thank you.
Yeah, probably I may take that. So on the LID study, I think what we have disclosed is that our cap is pretty close, and that is a question of history, pretty close to the milestone that we received for the U.S. approval of Xadago, because we went back to someone and said, look, we are believers in this compound. You know what? We will take the money that you just paid to us for the U.S. approval, and we'll put it back on the table. And if you go back to that annual report, you'll see that it is close to about like 10 million euros, okay? So without disclosing a number, that is about dimensions. The milestone that we will get, if that study should be successful and label should be granted, is about 40% of what we invest into the study in a one-off. And then the increase in the royalties in percent will be low, but it will apply to the full sales by Sambon. And the reason beyond that is, or behind that is, because we agreed with Sambon that it would be impossible to allocate the sales to older new label. It would just be Xadago sales. So we agreed that the increase of royalty should be on all sales by Sambon, and then the percentage is mild. But there's no doubt, and Roberto has done numbers of calculations, there's no doubt that the money that we will invest, so the about 10 million, will come back to us. Even in a case that, unlikely from our point of view, the study should not succeed, if it just leads to about 5 or 6% more prescriptions just because of the work and because some more medics come to use Xadago, because it obviously has some promise in improving dyskinesia, that will do for us.
Yeah, just to add, we did the net present value, and the number is 6% confirmed. So we can, if the sales will increase by about 6%, our investment is paid off.
I think clearly, from our point of view, the message was this study is a no-brainer, given all that we know about the compound and all we know about the commercial potential this would add to the compound. For us, this is a no-brainer to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. You also get a unique selling point as well, a good differentiation as well, which would help with the total franchise in Parkinson's. So thank you for answering the questions, and good luck with the unblinding of the STARS results.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Lucy Codrington from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my questions. I've got a couple. If you could just remind us, the statistical plan that you submitted in December, was that because there had been a change? And if so, what led to that change? And then on that, when might you expect to get the minutes back from the FDA? Then on Xadago, any chance you could be more specific on the timelines of the start of the PD lead study? Because what discussions are still ongoing between you and Danbon that's going to enable that study to start? And secondly, sure. Are we expecting any milestones from Xadago this year? Thank you.
Thank you. Basically, the plan that we had submitted to the FDA sometime in September is the one that they came back with and comments. Not comments necessarily, but basically asking us not to unblind, but to pursue a face-to-face meeting. So we didn't really actually submit a new plan in December. We then basically asked for a meeting to discuss the issues that there were. And we had that meeting in January, and also actually in February. So basically we're getting the minutes now, probably tomorrow, maybe by Monday or Tuesday. So that's when we're getting the minutes from them. Essentially, there's not too much has changed. There's a minor changes here and there. The endpoints remain the same as what we have always talked about. Basically, there's no difference in that. It's going to be the bioradio, and it's going to be the caregiver instrument. There's some changes in the test, statistical test that we had to do compared to one versus the other. But I think, frankly speaking, that is not going to change all that much. It does change somewhat of the programming and how you assign the populations. but it's not going to change that much. So we're almost in basically fairly close to where we were when we started out. It's unfortunate that this FDA's comments to, you know, to rediscuss this came at a time when they did, and that led to a delay. So we expect that basically with the comments coming in the next few days, we should be able to move very fast from there onwards. And definitely by in the second quarter, we will be able to have the results. The lid comments I leave to Margot.
Which status we are on the PDLID negotiations with Sambon, and when we believe this study could start, and which milestones might happen?
Yeah, the discussion with Sambon is ongoing. The overall agreement has been reached. So, Neuron, if the discussion will progress as it currently stands, we should be responsible for the conduction of the trial. Of course, we are still discussing a number of technical questions which would lead to a final understanding on how the study should proceed and what kind of action Neuron should take in order to become the responsible for the conduct of the trial. This is something which is under discussion. We hope in the next few weeks to find a common understanding on how we should proceed. As you can expect, there are technical hurdles that has to be overcome. Nothing serious, but of course requires serious consideration. With respect to the date, with respect to the initiation of the trial, I can just confirm what Ravi just told you. We think that by end of year, we should be able to initiate the trial, meaning that by end of year, we should be able to have our first patient in. But as you said, this is something that still requires some technical adjustments to the whole process. So I cannot tell you more than that. I can just tell you that the discussion is progressing well. The interaction is very constructive. There's the mutual wish to go ahead the way we just described to you. I see no hurdles, but we have to go through these technical questions before saying we're there. This is what I can tell you. Does that answer your question?
Yep. Okay. And then just the last one was just, are you expecting any milestones for Xadago this year?
Yes. We have already booked one in the beginning of 2020, but these are not going to be as big as the one that we have booked before. Material numbers to come, we have to wait for commercial milestones. So not easy,
just
likely.
Yeah, just consider that we are waiting for additional approvals in other countries in the world where we would be entitled to share a portion of milestones, but these are small countries, so we don't expect that much. But of course, there will be some money coming in. I cannot tell you exactly how much money, but as Roberto just told you, we don't expect big amounts of money.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Lucy.
You're welcome.
The next question comes from the line of Samir Devani from RX Securities. Please go ahead.
Afternoon, everyone. I've got a few questions. Just going back to the guidance and R&D spend this year, I appreciate you may not want to give an exact figure, but perhaps you could give us just an approximate breakdown per program, what sort of proportion you're spending on the various programs, just to give us a greater sense of how you're investing in R&D. And then second question is, Ravi, you mentioned the evenamide patent, composition of matter patent has expired. And I'm just trying to understand your assumptions for exclusivity to 2028 plus extension. So perhaps you can just elaborate on that and also what the situation is in Europe. And then finally, Roberto, you mentioned that the R&D tax credit had fallen last year, even though the R&D spend had gone up meaningfully. So if you could just remind us as to why that was the case. Thanks very much.
Okay. So can I start from the last one? Because as per the budget, I was opening the file. So let me answer this one, and then I will leave the word to someone else, and then I'll be back to the first question.
Okay, I think I can. Okay, sorry.
Okay. So the R&D tax credit the structure of the R&D tax credit is quite complex, because you have to do an average of the expenditure that you have incurred in the period from 2012 and 2018, and this is the baseline on which you are allowed to evaluate the increase on your expenses. On such increase, the law allowed the companies to apply a certain percentage that was used to define the total R&D tax credit. In 2019, the stability law said, okay, instead of using 50% as a percentage to be applied to the incremental R&D expenditure, you have to use 25% on almost all the expenses, but personal expenses or staff costs, if you prefer, and certain costs that you are incurring with Italian universities. So this is mainly the reason why, instead of seeing an R&D tax credit growing in the same direction of the development cost, we have seen it going the other way, because the 50% was reduced down to 25%. Does this answer your question?
Yeah, that's great. Thanks.
Now, if you gave me a few seconds,
Okay, Roberto, in the meantime, I can answer the question on the patent. Maybe there is a misunderstanding. The patent, the composition of matter patent, has not expired. It was granted in 2013 in the U.S., but the patent is dated 2018. So that means that the 20-year initial term will expire in 2028. And we are quite confident, given the mechanism in order to calculate the patent term extension, that we will get the full 5 years. Of course, you have to wait until the end, but generally speaking, we don't see any reason why we shouldn't be granted the extension. So I'm sorry, maybe there was a misunderstanding. The patent is still a valid patent. It will last until 2028 plus the up to 5 year extension. In the US, it was granted. In Europe, there are some delays. We have no reasons to think that the patent will not be granted. There have been no objections raised by the European Patent Office. So we would expect that to come in a relatively short term. So I'm sorry, there was a misunderstanding, but I hope I have clarified that.
That makes sense. Thanks.
Okay.
So back to the cost. I can tell you that in the next couple of years, Neuron will face about 35, 38 million euros of R&D cost. And these are splitted about 30% on Xadago, 15% on Xadago, 50% on Sarizotan, and the remaining on the Lenamide.
That's great. Thanks very much. Just maybe one follow-up. Just on the EIB loan, what's the plan to – how much are you planning to draw down this year? Thanks.
Well, it all depends on how things are going. So if everything goes as expected, I believe that we will draw down an additional tranche. And yes, but it all depends on how things will go.
Yeah, these thoughts are taking us into scenarios. So let me play the blue sky scenario. So Sarizotan results are fantastic, and we will immediately start preparing, activating on Dennis's U.S. commercialization plan. Obviously, this is a different scenario from one in which the outcome is not a blue sky. Another scenario on evenamide. By September, Ravi comes back and says, we just presented the results from our first studies to the FDA. We are perfectly fine. I now need to start ramping up spending for the two pivotal studies. So lots of scenarios. And I think the good news is we have all the instruments that we need, and we have them available. So we do have cash at hand. We do have the additional 22 million. We do have the powers from our shareholders to take our stock to the U.S. NASDAQ. We have all it needs, and you have seen from the GNA from last year and from the previous announcements that we are analyzing the markets. So the instruments are all available. and we will play them and use them and exercise on them as we go and as we see the best value for the shareholders. And I think that's, at this point in time, given the multiple scenarios and outcomes, that's the best we can say.
That's great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
There are no more questions at the moment.
So if there are no further questions, I would like to thank everybody for attending this call, for your questions, for your interest. And we are hoping that we infected you with the excitement that we feel on the upcoming results and the progress we should make by the end of the year with our evenamide schizophrenia program. And we are looking forward to updating you as we go in 2020. Join us, stay tuned, and hopefully let's have a big party once the results are out and we are on track for an approvable drug, Cerezetan, in Rets. Thank you all and have a good rest of the day.